Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, welcome to the New Books in Jewish Studies podcast. I am your host, Ari Barbalat. I am in dialogue today with Dr. Helene Johara Pinier, who is a professor of history at the University of Tours. We will be discussing her new book, Jews' Food in Spain, the oldest medieval Spanish cookbook, and the Sephardic Culinary Heritage, published in Boston by Academic Studies Press 2022. Thank you for being with us today. It's a tremendous honor.
Thank you so much, Ari. I'm so glad to be interviewed by you.
What inspired you to write this book? What message do you hope to convey to readers?
In fact, this book is very meaningful. I'm so happy for having publishing it. My goal is here to bring knowledge concerning to bring knowledge and understanding and consciousness concerning the richness and the complexity of the food and cooking practices of the Jews from Spain and the diaspora since the Middle Ages and to the early modern period.
What are the primary themes in your book? What story does your book tell?
The primary themes in my book. The first one is the first cookbook written in Spain. It's a cookbook called the Kitab in Arabic, the Kitab al-Tabikh, which means the cookbook, in fact, in Arabic. And this is my first and main source. This book is very special because first of all, because it's the first one written in Spain, and then because it contains 6 explicitly Jewish recipes. So this is my primary theme here in my cookbook. And then what story does this book tell? In fact, this book tells the story of a people, Jewish people, who had always been living as a minority and who had always been living under the rules of the others. And so they had to adapt their practices. Food practices or liturgical practices, but whose faith made them stronger and allowed to still being here and cook the way they used to.
Can you tell us about the importance of Kitab al-Tabikh? What can we learn from the 6 Jewish recipes in this cookbook? What does Kitab al-Tabikh reveal about the social history of its period?
The Kitab al-Tabikh is very important because, as I told previously, it's the first cookbook written in the Iberian Peninsula in the 13th. It dates back from the 13th century. So in the 13th century, the Jews were living under Muslim dominations. And at this time, it was quite hard to be living under the Almohad dynasty. It was a Berber dynasty from from Morocco, so what we could know it as a Morocco. This cookbook is totally relevant because among the 462 recipes, there are 6 explicitly Jewish recipes. This is totally unique. It does not exist in the West territories. So this is totally new and totally unique. So we can ask ourselves why would have been written 6 explicitly Jewish recipes when we know about the complex context when this cookbook has been written. What can we learn about the 6 Jewish recipes? In fact, we can learn about the food that were used to make the recipes. And those foods were mainly onions and pine nuts and lamb and also eggplant and many eggs. And of course, spices like cinnamon, but also mint and cumin. The 6 explicitly Jewish recipes were not totally different from the other recipes that did not bear the term Jewish in the title. It was mainly the Muslim recipes. But what is interesting to even if in those recipes, in those recipes, the main point was the way those recipes were prepared. In fact, what was more important was the cooking method used to make the recipes, and not mainly the ingredients used to prepare the recipes.
What kinds of bread recipes are found in Kitab al-Tabikh? Can you illuminate us?
Yes, the topic of the bread is very, very interesting because, in fact, the bread used in the Kitab al-Tabikh was mainly flat bread. That's the first thing. We have a lot of information concerning dishes that used what was called fatir, which was, in fact, like matzah, I mean unleavened bread. And this kind of bread, as this unleavened bread, was used inside the dishes. It was just cut into small chunks, small parts, small pieces, and some broth covered the pieces of bread, and everything was eaten with meat, and this was one of the way that the bread was eaten in the Kitab al-Tabikh.
How does your book advance our knowledge of the history of kashrut?
My book aims to bring knowledge concerning the way that the Jews and the Sephardim from Spain respect the kashrut. We do not have to judge. We have just to understand the context. First of all, I can only talk about this concerning through the Inquisition trials. Thanks to the Inquisition trials from Spain, we can understand that all the conversos, I mean, the conversos, I just remind that the conversos were the Jews that officially converted to Christianity, but on the other side, they kept being Jewish and keep their Jewish practices. So what we can understand concerning the respect of the kashrut in the Inquisition trials is that, for example, they did not eat pork. Second, they used to remove the tendons of the meat. But what is also very interesting is that, and they used to to eat a lot of vegetables in their dishes. But what is very interesting is that we do not have in the Inquisition trials information concerning the separation between meat and dairy products. This is very interesting because I don't say that this part of the kashrut was not respected by them. I just say that it is not something mentioned in the Inquisition trials from Spain, but also from Mexico and Brazil. So this is quite interesting.
To what degree should cookbooks be studied as literature? What can literary theory teach us about cookbooks? What are the advantages and disadvantages of a literary perspective on cookbooks and history?
In fact, cookbooks, I think it is a very, it's not a good idea to study and to understand cookbooks only as a source that deals with the food that were used to prepare a dish. The cookbooks can be understood as historical sources because we have to be able to read under the lines because they have to be understood as like a kind of literature because they reveal more than only the dishes, the food that were used by the people. Analyzing what kind of food was forbidden, we can understand the social and the political context. So what can we say more is that cookbooks have to be considered as historical sources, not only as just a book that contains recipes. And we can learn a lot concerning history if we study the recipes of a book that contains recipes.
The closing words of your book are, "To eat is to remember." Why did you end your book with these words? How do they relate to the contents and themes of your book? What does this proverb mean? Can you interpret it for us?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I just closed the book with this sentence, "To eat is to remember," because I think that the story do not have to end. It has to be shared. It has to share the awareness of the richness of the history of the Jews of Spain and the diaspora. In fact, the daily act of eating helps to remember. Eating what our ancestors ate is a way to contribute to sharing knowledge concerning the food practices and the culinary practices of the Jews of Spain and the diaspora. So that's why this sentence is meaningful. To eat is to remember is when you eat, so you remember the history of the people who gave their life, and thanks to them, you are still here. So it's a way to contribute to the consciousness of our history.
What is your book's contribution to the history of the Inquisition?
My book aims to understand the history of Spain and mainly the Inquisition, what the Inquisition trials reveal. In fact, we have a lot of we can find a lot of works concerning that has been written concerning the Inquisition trials. But in fact, and we can also find different works concerning the food in the Inquisition trials. But what my book offers is a real and special work concerning only the food and the culinary practices through the Inquisition trials. And what I did is I did not use only the Inquisition trials from one town in Spain, but I also used the Inquisition trials from many, many towns in all Spain, but also in another study, I have been able to do this with the Inquisition trials from Mexico. But here in this book, what I did is to understand and to analyze the food that was highlighted in many, many Inquisition trials from the Inquisition. I just remember that the Inquisition in Spain started in 1478 and only ended at the beginning of the 19th century. I just focused on the period from the 1478 until the 17th century, but only with this we can understand a lot concerning food practices of the conversos in Spain.
What does your book teach us about the ways that Jewish holidays were celebrated in medieval Spain?
That's an interesting question. The holidays, the celebration of the holidays were very, very important. Why? Because in the Jewish calendar, we have a lot of Jewish holidays to celebrate. And each Jewish holiday was an occasion for the Jewish family to celebrate the holiday in question. And this imply the preparation of different kinds of dishes regarding the holiday they were celebrating. And this is very important because, first of all, this highlights that the converso were celebrating almost all the Jewish holidays. I said almost because one were more considered as or mainly more celebrated than others. For example, Pesach, Passover, Shabbat were among the Jewish holidays that were mainly and always celebrated. But on the other part, we have a few informations concerning Rosh Hashanah, for example, and a little also few information concerning the fast of Esther or Purim. We have information concerning Hanukkah also, but just few information concerning this. So the holidays highlights the importance of celebrating Judaism for the conversos of Spain. But it has been also a way for the people who denounced the Jews. It was easier for those who denounced the Jews to do it, because as there were a lot of Jewish holidays, this was also a lot of occasions to denounce the Jews for their practices.
What role did food and recipes play in trials during the Spanish Inquisition?
What is interesting is that in Inquisition trials, you cannot find recipes. I mean, what is a recipe? A recipe is you have a title and you have a description of the food and the process to make the dish. Just be clear, in the Inquisition trial, we never, never, never have a recipe. You have sometimes you have, of course, the title of the name of the dish. This happens for several kinds of dishes. But what we mainly have is the method that the converso used to prepare the dish. We have the ingredients. You do not have exactly the process, but you have the ingredients and you have the way that sometimes the dish needs to be prepared. But we never, never have a recipe as we understand the recipe nowadays.
Can you tell us about Maria Sanchez and the Leon family? What does this story reveal?
Maria Sanchez was a servant. Maria Sanchez was, in fact, she has been living in a city called Almazan, from very close to Madrid, and she was a servant who worked for a family of conversos, and this family of conversos was named the family, the Leon family. So Maria was not the only servant who was working for the Leon family. You also have Catalina. She was also working for the Leon family in Almazan. Maria Sanchez's family has been working for the Leon family, but what she did also is she denounced the Jewish Leon family for their culinary and food practices. What does this reveal? This reveals that, because in fact the trial concerning the Leon family and the Sanchez family revealed that in almost all the trials, the Inquisition trials, it was always the servant that denounced the woman of the Jewish family. And this revealed that the servant played a key role concerning denunciations, because the servants were always in the house. They cleaned the house, they cooked for the Jewish family, and the servant were in charge of taking care of what was happening in the house. So that's why mainly servants, non-Jewish servants, denounced a Jewish family for their practices, because the servants knew very well the practices of the Jewish family. And they were mainly only women, denouncing women.
What does your research reveal about the history of dictionaries? Which dictionaries did you consult? When were they composed and published? How were they similar and different from one another?
Studying dictionaries is very interesting, because when you study a dictionary, you really have the dictionaries really reflect how the society was thinking in the time it has been written. For example, I used Tesoro de la Lengua Española. You have the dictionary from Covarrubias. I used a dictionary from Nebrija. Those dictionaries have been written since the end of the 15th century and onwards. And what is interesting is that, for example, if you find information concerning what would have been the definition concerning the word adafina, you can read that it was a dish that was prepared by the Hebrew, by the Jews, for Sabbath on Friday night. So dictionaries are always very, very relevant, because in fact they only reflect the way that the society used to see the people that were living during this context, during this period.
Speaking of which, what is Adafina? Can you tell us about it?
Adafina is the more iconic Sephardic dish. It is totally unique. Totally unique. They are in the history of Spain that deals with the Jews and the Jewish practices. And if we focus on Inquisition trials, this is mainly obvious. Adafina is the only one, almost the only one in Inquisition trials that bears exactly a name. Because this proved that it was an iconic dish. Adafina is also a word written in dictionaries that of the 16th and 17th century. And the definitions of Adafina in those dictionaries are totally in relation with Jewish practicing for Sada. Adafina is a stew that the conversos used to prepare on Friday night. It contains meat, chickpeas, and Swiss chard. And it is cooked all night from Friday evening until Saturday noon. In the Inquisition trials, this dish is mentioned almost everywhere. This proved that it was very important for the conversos and that the conversos used to eat it. It also proved that the non-Jewish people knew about this culinary practice of making Adafina.
What is the dish ani? Can you describe and explain it?
Yes. In fact, ani is the same as Adafina. Here, we must say that Adafina, of course, was the name for this stew made with beef and chickpeas and Swiss chard. But Adafina was not the only name used to prepare this dish. Adafina, ani, chamin, trasnochado. In fact, all those names refer to Adafina. They mean exactly the same. Adafina is a word that comes from ad dafun, which means buried, because the dish was prepared it was hidden and it was prepared in the house, and nobody could know what was inside. Ani, it's exactly the same. It's just it bears a different name. We can suppose that the Adafina bears different names because it was a way for the Jews to hide their practices, and they could use in fact different names just to be, because they were thinking that using different names so the Inquisition could not identify them. So chamin, it's at the same chamin, it's a word from Arabic, which means hot, because the dish Adafina was eaten was very hot.
What was the Fudalat El Huwan cookbook? Where did it originate? What is its legacy? What recipes the is Fudal- it? Word?
Oh, the Fudalat El Huwan is the second cookbook written in the Iberian Peninsula. It is the second one, because the Kitab al Tabir is the first one and has been written a few decades before the Fudalat El Huwan. But they are different. First of all, because Fudalat El Huwan, we know the author of the Fudalat El Huwan, and we do not know the author of the Kitab al Tabir. The Kitab al Tabir, it's anonymous. The Fudalat El Huwan, we know the author, and it's Al Tujibi, and he was Muslim. The Fudalat El Huwan has been written in the 13th century too, but as I told before, previously, it has been written a few decades after the Kitab al-Tabir. We learn a lot concerning, of course, the practices of the 13th century, and also the practices of the Middle East. And it originates from the city of mainly from the east of Andalusia, where is nowadays Murcia. And the Kitab, the Fudalat El Huwan, does not contain explicitly Jewish recipes. So that's also interesting because it's different from the Kitab al-Tabir, which is anonymous. So, but nevertheless, in the Fudalat al-Hiwan, you can also find, there is also a relation between the Kitab al-Tabir and the Fudalat al-Hiwan concerning several recipes, for example, the recipes of makrut, which is a pastry, fried pastry, which contains dates, and then which is deeply and it is each dipped in honey. So this recipe is also in the Kitab al-Tabir, but does not appear exactly the same. Or the recipe of Isfenj also, but the recipes are totally different. And the main difference is that the Fudalat al-Hiwan does not contain explicitly Jewish recipes.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com. .com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
What does your book teach us about technology in the medieval period? What technology was used to cook, prepare, transport, and store food?
My book teaches about the cooking method used in Spain in the Middle Ages and the early modern period. As I just said previously, of course, the food that the Jews used to prepare the dishes, of course, was important. But the more important was the way they used to prepare the dishes. For example, we know that the Jews from Spain and then the Sephardim used to prepare dishes, stuffed dishes. It could be stuffed eggplant, or stuffed pastries. We can just think that it was because, of course, it was super good, super tasty, but also because it could have been easily for them to use different kinds of meat, and as the meat was used to stuff the food, so nobody could knew about what was inside, which kind of meat was used to prepare the dish. We can also think that when you used to prepare individual pastries or individual dishes, it was easier to transport them or to store them. My book also teach us about the organization of the market between Jews, Christian, and Muslim practices. We know that, for example, they almost all have access to the market, but the market was organized differently because the Christian used to go to this part of the market, and at the other part of the market there were the Jewish butchers and other. So it's not just only concerning food, but it deals with all the Jewish practices concerning Jewish life in the medieval period and the early modern period.
What does your book teach us about memory and collective memory?
I think, I really hope that my book teach us about the importance of the awareness and the consciousness of our history. We all know that history is very important concerning life, because we cannot understand our life today without understanding how was the life of our ancestors. What I also wanted to do with this book is just to highlight the importance of a collective memory based on the knowledge of historical sources. I really wanted to underscore that there are sources that deal with Jewish with history, the history of Spain and the history of the Jews. And I really wanted that everybody knew about this. And that's why, and not through different kinds of separated works, I really wanted to do one book with all the information that deals with the history of Spain and focused on the history of the Jews from the 13th century onward. So that's why, and that's why I wrote this book.
What, if anything, is Jewish or uniquely Jewish or distinctly Jewish about Jewish culinary history in Spain?
If we have a look, if I answer to this question, focusing on the 15th, 16th, 17th century, I would say that what is Jewish or distinctly Jewish, or what was Jewish or uniquely Jewish in this period, I would say the preparation of the unleavened bread and the preparation of dishes that were buried or that were stuffed. This was very unique. Nowadays, we can talk about the Jewish legacy concerning food and cuisine, of course, but it's more complex to talk about this, because actually in Spain, there is not an obvious recognition of the culinary heritage of the Jews of Spain from the 13th century to onward, in fact. We know about this, but there is no official recognition. And thanks to my book, what I really wanted is that to bring a scientific knowledge concerning what the dishes, concerning the relation of the dishes that are prepared nowadays in Spain with the Jewish legacy.
What do cabejas, sausages without pork, reveal about Jewish ordinary life during the Inquisition?
Okay, cabejas were sausages without pork. Among the dishes that bear a name, explicitly a name in the Inquisition trials, so there was the adafina, and the other one was the cabejas. What the main difference between the two names, those two names, is that adafina is still prepared nowadays in among the Sephardic families from Spain, for example, or if they were Sephardic family from Spain, then I've moved to Morocco. This adafina bears the name of Hamin or Srina, but in fact, that's the same. But what is interesting is that the kabahela, so the sausages without pork, this name totally disappeared. We do not know why, but those sausages, the name of the sausages totally disappeared. Nevertheless, what is interesting is that this name was mentioned in an important amount of inquisition trials from Spain. So this proved that kabahelas, the sausages without pork, were prepared by the Jews from Spain, mainly from the north of Spain, from the northern east to the northern west, like a line. This, what is interesting is the kabahelas dish is that, of course, it did not contain pork. It contains beef. And we have so many information concerning the making of the kabahelas. The kabahelas, the meat used for the kabahela, to do the kabahelas, came from the Jewish quarter. And so the men used to go there to bring the meat home, and the wife, his wife, used to remove the tendons, and then the meat was used to prepare the kabahelas. The meat was dry. The meat was put in the sausages, and then everything was dried. So it was impossible to know for the non-Jewish people what kind of meat was used to prepare the sausages. And once it was dried, it really looked like the pork sausages of the Christians. What we could add here is that in the northern east of Portugal nowadays, there is a sausages called Aleira, which really look like the kabahelas from the Inquisition period, but nevertheless, the Aleira was mainly prepared with lean meat, like chicken, and the kabahelas was prepared with beef meat, but no pork in both.
Were there any notable Spanish, Jewish, or Sephardic cookbooks in the post-Inquisition period?
No, there is no. the answer is super easy because you just have to think about, just to think a little about this. The complexity of the context explain, in fact, the lack of cookbooks in the post-Inquisition period. It was almost very hard for Jews to hide their practices during the Inquisition. So if they had written a cookbook during the Inquisition, it would have been worse for them. It would have been totally impossible to live because the Jewish their practices, if there was a writing, an official writing through a cookbook, this would have been even easier for those who wanted to denounce the Jews, to denounce them, because they would have been identified for their recipes and their culinary practices. So no cookbooks.
How widely known were Sephardic recipes in Italy and the wider Mediterranean world? Can you share any examples of dishes that were known either among non-Jews in Italy and the wider Mediterranean, or that were shared with Jewish communities in Italy and the wider Mediterranean?
I'm not a specialist of Italy, so I'm going to ask you just speaking about the sources that I used to write my book, Jews, Food, and Spain. In fact, what I can say is that I had to read Inquisition trials from the city of Venice in Italy, which is, they are very interesting. I also had to study a book that was that deal with the story of a woman, the Lozana Andaluza, Aldonza, and which and the context is Italy, Roma at the beginning of the 16th century. What I can say is that thanks to those two kinds of sources, we can find a relation between the Jewish converso Italian practices and the Spanish converso practices, mainly concerning, for example, a dish which is called in Spanish nuegados. This dish of nuegados was, we have mentioned of this dish of nuegados in a trial from Spain, from northern Spain. It's a dish that is mentioned in my cookbook, Sephardi Cooking the History. And this dish is made from short, very small chunks of dough, which is, they are fried and then dipped in honey. And you have to make like a crown, okay, like a ring, maybe, like a ring. And this dish is also mentioned in Italian sources that deal with converso practices, but it bears a different name. And nowadays in Italy, in different parts of Italy, like Campania, for example, you can find exactly the same way and the same appearance of this dish, nuegados in Spain, but in this part of Italy. For example, in the book, in literature, in the book De Lozana Andaluza, written by the converso Francisco Delicado, we have evidences of practices of this woman, Aldonza, who arrived in Roma in 1526. And we can learn through her experience and thanks to the dishes that her grandmother taught her, that there are recipes that arrived in Italy, in Roma, thanks to the Jews who left Spain and just arrived in Roma. So in fact, what we have to keep in mind is that when the Jews were moving, they brought with them their culinary practices to the new territory where they settled. So it's totally logical that we can find in Italy nowadays dishes that in fact belongs to the Spanish heritage, converso heritage.
How much continuity is there between medieval Spanish food and modern and contemporary Spanish food? What has changed and evolved in Spanish cooking between the Inquisition and the 20th and 21st centuries?
There is a relation, of course, but it's not obvious. Mm-hmm. Why? Because Jews had to adapt their practices if they wanted to be alive. But nevertheless, on the other way, their faith in Judaism was very strong. And this, thanks to this, there is a culinary heritage. But there is a culinary heritage that we can understand and we can see nowadays in the Spanish culinary legacy. But nevertheless, it's not obvious because Jews had to hide their practices and had to adapt their practices. But of course, there is in the gastronomy in Spain nowadays dishes that belongs to the cooking practices and the dishes that the converso used to do. It's not obvious. It's not, and it's quite hard to. It's hard to fight for this recognition. But the fact is, yes, there is Jewish culinary heritage in nowadays Spanish gastronomy. Spanish gastronomy.
In your acknowledgments, you refer to many people who you benefited from in preparing this project. Can you share some names of individuals with us who you feel especially grateful to? Can you describe anyone who provided you with help that was indispensable? Would you like to convey appreciation to anyone publicly?
Oh, this is a good question. It's very hard to answer because I've been talking to different people and they helped me, but for different things, in fact. For example, I could mention my advisor when I did my doctorate. It's the professor Bruno Loriot from the University of Tours, because he was the advisor during my doctorate, and he always helped me, and he believed in me and in my research. So I'm totally grateful for this help. Then I can mention Jason Guberman from the American Sephardi Federation, because it's another kind of help. But Jason from the American Sephardi Federation New York, he's the executive manager there, always believed in my work and support me and find me ways to highlight my research. And this is, I will be always grateful to him. I could also thank David Kremer from the Jewish Theological Seminary of New York. David Kremer is a professor too, and he also works at the library of the Jewish Theological Seminary. He helped me concerning the name in Hebrew in my research. We have been talking about this topic. I am very grateful, and I would like to thank him. And of course, I would like to thank Paul Friedman from Yale University. He wrote the foreword of my book. I really would like to thank him because he's very, very, it has been a real pleasure to work with him. He gave me different kinds of, he advised me concerning, okay, Ellen, maybe you can just see this, thinking about this way, and make some research concerning this topic, and maybe edit some things here that you wrote, for example, in this part of the book. And I really would like to thank Paul Friedman for this.
As we bring our dialogue today to a close, what are you working on next as your current project now that this one is behind you? Can you share with us your upcoming research?
Yes. Jews, Food, and Spain has been published at the beginning of December, so it's totally new. I'm very happy for this. And of course, I am working on another project because I am currently writing for a new cookbook like Sephardi, but on another topic, which deals with Passover and bread. So it's totally new. And this historical cookbook will be highlighting the consumption of flour and bread and matzah, not only in Spain, but in all the Sephardic world, and so the diaspora. It will be more than 100 recipes. I'm almost completed this, but I am still working on it a little bit. So it will be available for 2024. And then, of course, I have different kinds of events scheduled in order to highlight the Sephardic culinary heritage. I did one at the Moses Safra Center in New York, like last week, last Thursday, in fact, 1 week ago. It was amazing. So many people were interesting. So I'm still working on those kinds of projects between lecture. For example, I will give a lecture at UPenn University on Tuesday, 28 February. And many other events with the Weizmann Museum of Philadelphia, but I'll be back also into New York in February. And I also working with chefs that wants to make events in their restaurants because they have a strong relation with Judaism or the Jewish history. So my goal, in fact, is to do everything possible to highlight the culinary history of the Jews through, as I told before, through events, through lectures, so partnership with foundations, through partnership with cooks and restaurants, whatever. This is my goal.
Sounds fantastic. I wish you the best of endeavors.
Thank you for everything you're
doing and you have done to benefit the Jewish world and the Jewish community.
Thank you so much, Ari. That's so meaningful. That's I'm very happy.
Thank you. I could not be more grateful.
Thank you so much.
As we bring our dialogue today to a close, I am your host on the New Books Network, Ari Barbalat. I've been in dialogue today with Dr. Helen Johara Pinier, who is a historian at the University of Tours. We have been discussing her new book, Jews, Food in Spain, the Oldest Medieval Spanish Cookbook and the Sephardic Culinary Heritage, published in Boston by Academic Studies Press 2022. Thank you.
Thank you.